What is that thing? What is laziness? You know, there's a word in our language called avolition. Now, avolition, you've never heard that word, I'm sure. It's a psychological state of mind characterized by a lack of drive. Did you ever feel that way, like you just can't get up, you can't do anything? Now, that could either be because you're depressed. It could be because you're kind of, you're feeling really crazy. Or it could be because you just have nothing that you're interested in. Over long periods of time, you get this kind of flat affect, you know, anhedonia. There's another good word, anhedonic. An anhedonic person is a person who gets no pleasure out of anything. So if you go to an anhedonic depressed person, and they're depressed, they don't enjoy anything. So if you go to them with a flower and say, here's a flower for you, they don't enjoy the flower because they can't enjoy it. It's anhedonic. They can't enjoy sex. They can't enjoy pleasure. They don't enjoy. So there's one state of mind when you're avolitional, when you can't enjoy anything. And so nothing will pull you out. So we always want to determine, is that person depressed and that's why they have no motivation? Is that person afraid and that's why they have no motivation? So let's look at nature. Let's look at how nature designed us. It used to be believed that nature was trying to find a state of homeostasis where we're in balance. You know how many people say, if only I could find balance, if only I could relax, if only I could find myself swinging into a nice, calm reality? Well, we used to believe that that's all we were looking for, balance. Turns out, upon investigation further, that the ideal state of being is not a state of balance, but a state where you're ready to fire. It's called the ready-to-fire response. It means your nerves are inactive, they're active and they're ready to fire. They're laying there nice and comfortably, but they're looking to fire. So there's one place where your nerves are flat, and where your nerves are not ready to fire, that's one state of mind. Another state of mind is where your nerves are ready to fire, which means you're sharp, you're alert, and you're okay. The first one, where your nerves are not ready to fire, are usually associated with death and dying. Because if you're not growing, you're dying. That's the way nature sees it. If your cells aren't growing, they're kind of sliding back, and you're dying. So nature wants you to always be active or be motivated in some kind of way. Some people can't get motivated. Many of you listening to me right now can do little more than turn on the radio and listen to The Positive Mind. In fact, if you want to call us a little later, we'll give you our number now. We'll be taking the calls, and our phones are fixed. Fixed, and this phone number is so good. 757-212-757-5555. How can you forget that? 212-757-5555. Won't you remember that? We worked it so you could have an easy phone number to remember. 212-757-5555. So we're going to be talking about laziness, and we're going to be talking about this anhedonic. You know, avolition means poverty of will. It's like you don't have the will to take you where you need to go. You don't have it. You get up in the morning, you don't want to get out. And it's like, I know we're going to get enormous responses to this. But Ben, what did you see as you were looking through this?
Well, I think avolition is the concept that you introduced to me. When I think about it, I hear it happening to people maybe right after major life milestones and major life periods, ends of eras, if you will. So the ones that came to mind immediately for me that I feel that I've gone through in my experience were the avolition after either the loss of a job or the end of a relationship. But there are many more that came to mind that I haven't personally experienced, but I can see in others, like the rut that some people may get into after retirement, for example.
Retirement's a tricky thing, boy. It's a very tricky thing, because if you don't have a motive to go anywhere, you wake up in the morning and you catch the early breakfast in Florida and you do a few rounds of golf, what next? The same walk, the same everything?
Right. And also, I see a lot of people, younger people, that go through this after graduating college. You know, the end of that whole period of life and just being sort of ejected from the academy into the world.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, when I graduated in May and I saw countless friends of mine sort of just leave that energetic state of 4 years or really 12 years of school and say, well, what now? And they didn't really go into the workforce with a job, and they just sort of said, okay, should I just calm down and relax, or what should I do?
And they fell into a high unemployment rate. When you graduated, there was a very high unemployment rate. There were no jobs available, right? And there was party was available, and that was available. That you could possibly do. And the question becomes, what do I do now? Do I grow up or don't I? Do I take this step or don't I take this step?
Right, and it's a little easy to hang on to the not taking that step yet.
And the forever unemployment check that that you could also get, you know, would kind of keep you in that spot. Also, so somehow, I think you're going to say that social media affects the ability to stay in this avolitional state.
Yeah, and we've done a program on that a little bit about that before. Hikikomori is something that in Japan, it's a phenomenon among the younger generation of Japanese students, and then it happens also in America, where basically there's a group of people from 15 to 25 years old who just are at home for 6 months to a year without hardly going outside, maybe just to get a Mountain Dew or some chips, and they play video games 18 hours a day, or go on forums, or watch videos, watch TV, and really don't ever leave their desk. And it's easier to do that when you've got a computer with just endless amounts of entertainment and communication with the rest of the world in front of you at your fingertips.
You know, we were talking recently to some people in the professional world, the actors, the actresses, the models. You know, you're in between jobs. And I want to talk to you as an actor. And also in the studio with us is Vika Marine Levine, who's with us as well today. Hi, Vika.
Hey.
This idea of waiting for jobs in between, does that tend to lead itself towards this avolitional kind of lazy state? Do you get lazy? Do you feel lazy?
It's for me, I don't know about you, Vika, but it's weird because it's very staccato. I don't know if you know the word staccato, but it's like back and forth. I'll feel lazy, and then all of a sudden I'm extremely busy, and then I'm lazy and busy, and it's like this. It's jumpy, and I find myself lazy for 2 weeks doing nothing, and I feel totally stagnant. And then out of nowhere, I'll be totally busy in between jobs, auditions, opportunities, bouncing all over the place for a month, and then back to 2 months of nothing.
What about you, Vika? What do you see?
Well, I feel the same sometimes. I can be busy and it's motivate me even more, but sometimes when it's nothing, you just feel really lazy and you don't even feel like to go anywhere, and you don't feel like they need you because you don't have a job, and it just made you feel even worse. And
so now that could lead you to a depression. Not having motivation could lead you to a state of depression, is what you're
definitely
saying.
Yeah.
And the whole idea that they don't need you means I'm not a part of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to feel a part of something.
Yeah, I know when I'm waiting around, I mean, I know when I went traveling for 3 months, I came back and there was like a 2 month period where I didn't hear from my agents. And I felt just useless. I wanted to give up on my acting. I felt like they just didn't want me. They didn't care about me. And I just kind of sat there, watched TV, didn't really leave my house much. It was the winter, so I didn't go outside that much. I kind of just didn't really do much with myself because I didn't get any calls. And I definitely was in a little bit of a place of abolition, yeah.
This is it's a funk, so let's take what I'll call it. Arlene, hi, are you still with us?
Hi, I'm right here.
Hello,
hi.
Arlene. Welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand. I don't know if I think it's beyond laziness for me, but I lost my job June 2013 teaching high school, and I had to bring home all my papers and art supplies, and I haven't been able to get to clear this place, and I just have stacks of my teaching notes and art supplies, and it's also my studio, the living room, and I've gotten about a quarter of it done in a year.
Mm-hmm.
but I'm just, it's just looming.
Are you in that room right now?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah, right now.
Yeah, okay, so now I want you to go to some of your teaching books. You have them in a basket somewhere?
Oh, they're just piled like maybe 3 feet, four feet high.
Go to one of the piles.
All right, I'm going to have to move the phone.
Yeah, move the phone, go to one of the piles. Are you sitting down?
No, I'm walking over. Okay, I'm by a pile. Yeah.
Okay, get a seat for yourself. Get a chair to put next to that.
Okay. All right.
All right. Now, I want you to, could you cradle the phone in your ear? And could you put your two hands on the pile? Is that possible or is that too mechanical?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay, put your hands on the pile. I want you to talk to the pile like these are your children. And I want you to say to them, I don't want to let you go.
I don't want to let you go.
Okay, now I want you to feel that again and say it again.
Okay. I'm going to put up a favorite book on top. Okay. I don't want to let you go.
Yeah, that favorite book represents a lot to you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What does it represent?
It's a way that I can help students learn how to draw.
Yeah.
And, so.
So this is a time in your life where you really felt valuable. You felt like you were doing something important, and now without it, you have no place to go. So what you're doing is holding on to it. You're holding on to the children. You're holding on to the memories. Good for you. Good for you. You paper your walls with them. You hang them all over the place. You have been a noble teacher. You deserve to have these as medals. Don't worry about clutter. Don't worry about getting rid of it. Live with it because you deserve it. I bet you didn't expect to hear that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, well, you deserve it. This is the work you've done. This is what you've given. They retired you. Screw them. Hang on to them. These kids one day are going to come back and knock on your door and they're going to say, thanks for being such a good teacher, honey. You know?
Well,
think of one of those kids. I want you to think of one of the ones who was such a problem who turned away from being a problem. Probably about 5 years old. Who was that?
Oh, no, I taught high school.
Okay, so which one of these kids? Give me a problem child that you thought you were teaching.
Oh, no, I know exactly. I mean, everyone else thought he was a problem. And I gave him 3 extra classes, just personal classes a week, you know, during my free periods. And this student is an amazing photographer now.
Great. What's his first name? What's his first name?
Ethan.
Ethan. So say, Ethan, I'm so proud of you and I'm so glad I was a part of your life.
Ethan, I'm so proud of you and I'm so happy that I've been a part of your life.
You made a difference, huh?
Yeah. He's an SVA now and an honor student and doing amazing photography. Amazing.
Good for you, Arlene. Listen, Arlene, so this is what you got.
Uh-huh.
Right? You got the badges from the past that you had. Everybody tells you and you tell yourself you should get rid of it and you should let it go. But it's nice to wear your badges for a while. You know, if you're in the wrestling ring, they give you a wrestler's, what do they give you around your waist?
One of those belts.
Belt?
Yeah, they give you a belt, right? And you walk around wearing that belt for a while. And you become, that's it, you're the hero, you're the champion. So you're a champion. And as far as I'm concerned, when you're ready to get there and do some more teaching, you give me a call, and I'm going to point you to a place where it's needed.
Okay.
You know, are you looking for a job, by the way?
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, yeah, what kind of job are you looking for? A job teaching, right?
Teaching art, uh-huh.
Yeah, what a nice thing. All right, well, send me an email. Who knows? Who knows who gets together with who? But you're certainly a valuable being, and thank you for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye. So there we see something interesting, Ben. The self-criticism that comes with that avolition. You beat yourself up for it. You see, it's bad enough that people are telling you, what's wrong with you? You don't have any motivation. You da, 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 da. Bad enough that happens. On top of that, you beat yourself up for it.
Well, it's funny because I was curious about something you mentioned before the phone call related to that, where you said that the avolition can lead to a depression. But couldn't it be the other way around? I mean, couldn't the depression trigger the avolition? Or is it a sort of chicken and egg scenario where we don't really know?
Well, you gave me 3 options just now. I'll go with the first one. Yes, the avolition can trigger depression. yes, the depression can trigger an abolition, and we always know.
And if it's the abolition that triggers the depression, then what was the cause of that abolition state to begin with?
That's it. And there's the thing that happens. What makes you cut off like that? What shuts you off like that? What kind of cuts you down? So if you're somebody like Vijay, you know, you have some empty time on your hand, you go out, you go playing, you go meet your friends, you have a good time. But if you're somebody else and you're in a different kind of mood, it kind of wipes you out. You know? Now, what kind of things wipe you out? Breakups. Breakups in relationships, they wipe you out in a different kind of way. And I kind of think of it as when you get invested in an unhealthy way in a relationship, and it's an unhealthy way, there's a merger of two personalities. And when the two personalities merge and half is gone, you feel like half a person. Somewhere there's a healthier way of relating where the two don't merge, so that if one leaves, there's still one left.
But even if there was a healthy breakup, couldn't some of this abolition just be tied to a structure or a structure system in our life that's no longer there? Like,
sure.
like we said about, you know, the post-college abolition, there was a structure, and now it's almost as though the rug's been pulled out from underneath, and the structure's no longer there. I could see that.
Or the death of a parent.
Right. There was a structure and a concrete understanding of how we relate to the world and others around us, and then that person's no longer there.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
212-757-5555 is our number. 212-757-5555. So let's look at this idea of retirement. It's a funny word, to retire. You know, it comes from what they used to do with trucks. When a truck gets too old, what they do is they put new tires on it. So it was called retiring a truck. You see, no, really, no, I'm not making that up. It's true.
Really?
It's not like Easter.
Okay.
Okay. It's my Easter story. I don't know if I told the audience the Easter story. No, I didn't tell the audience the Easter story.
Well, let's hear it.
I made up a story as to where the word Easter comes from. And I made this up. I said, what's the difference between Jews and Goyim and Catholics? And the difference is that Jews eat unleavened bread and Catholics eat leavened bread. So what happens at Easter? What do? You make leavened bread. And what kind of leavened bread would you use to make it? You use yeast. So I said, so the word is really happy Easter, as in the word yeast. I said, but they had a double Y at the end of it, so they called it Happy Easter. And for a while I told that story, and it felt real true. It's not true. Let's take another call. Tom, you're on the air. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, I'm a long-time listener and first-time caller.
Hey, congratulations for being on the line, Tom.
All right, I have a situation similar, you know, to what you're talking about. Empty nesters.
Okay.
My son is 18. My kids are all, you know, either out of college or finishing up college. And he's 18, going off to, you know, career or whatever he decides to do. And, you know, that's the point in your life when all of a sudden you look around and there's no more soccer games to go to. There's no more homework to badger someone over, all that kind of thing.
I want to tell you a little story about the work I did with some people who had children who had leukemia. Now, of course, it's a terrible thing, children who have leukemia. And the families would gather. Here's one of the things we learned about children with families of leukemia. When the child died, as it inevitably did, the family divorced, separated. Why was that? We studied. And the reason was that when you have all of your attention focused on a certain energy, a certain kind of energy, and the energy in this case is the sick child, and everybody's looking at the sick child, and they're worried about the sick child, and they're worried about where the child's going and how they're going to take care of it, and so on and so forth. It gets you to avoid looking at yourself and your relationship with each other. When the child leaves the nest, you're suddenly faced with yourself. It's a fabulous opportunity. It is a most incredible, shocking, fabulous opportunity, a chance to see who you are and what you're made of, and your second life happens. Listen, folks, I got a second life, and I got a third life, and I got a fourth life. It keeps coming around with every opportunity. You could be sick, you could be broken, you could be old, you could be anything. There's always a chance to get this additional thing. Now, here's your opportunity, you, Tom, and your wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
The two of you have a chance to find a new place. Where would you like to go that's different? Now that you have this space, where would you like to go that's different?
Well, it's funny because, you know, I think this is something that has to be managed to some extent. You have to be somewhat introspective, and I'm very lucky to have a great wife that we're both very much in love and we have a lot in common. So it's sort of a fluid thing, you know what I mean? I guess, you know, you won't really know till it happens, but I guess, you know, ultimately, from a global point of view, you know, we just want to sort of, you know, spend more time together, you know, growing in new and different and positive ways together. So right. I guess that's a blanket statement, you know, specifically, you know, probably spend more time, you know, hiking and in the outdoors. You know, maybe I'll even go back to school. There'll be lots of things. You know, there's going to be, you know, some pain, you know, associated with letting go. But as long as you can feel it together and put it in perspective and, you know, be happy that, you know, the job was well done, you move on.
What do you think, what opportunity do you think you and she, what about sexually? What about you and your wife? What are you going to do that's different?
Well, we'll certainly have more sex.
No, I know. It's what you would like, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It'll be more time, a little bit less stress, you know.
And does she agree with you on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we're, like I said, we're lucky because we're both good listeners and we both have a good relationship. And we can always sort of manage the things that come up, you know.
So here's what I need you to do. I need you to do something adventurous sexually with your wife. Something adventurous, something you've never done.
Twist my arm.
Yeah, no, I know you're laughing. You think I'm being lascivious and I'm just trying to talk about sex. No, I want you to go into that area because what I'm looking for is to find the hormones in you reactivated. You see, after you've let the kids go, when you have kids in the family, you become somebody who takes on a lot of female qualities. You mother them as well as father them. When you get a chance to be back with your wife, I want you to get back to being the man that you are. And the way to go back to that is to somehow activate your testosterone. And the way to activate it is to deliberately look at yourself taking on a place of power, of strength. So I need you to do something. I need you to romance her. I need you to dance her. I need you to do something sexually with your wife that you just haven't done before, something new. I think it would be very exciting. I'm sure she would like that very much. If she objects, she would tell you right away.
Right. Now, I get where you're coming from, you know, from a bigger perspective. Yeah, I agree. You know, you tend, your roles sort of tend to get a little squishy, you know.
Yeah, so you got to kick in. You got to kick in the activity. All right, so kick it in. This is a good way to do it because I think you would enjoy it and I think she might as well. But there are many other ways, playing and so on and so forth. But I wish you luck. That's great. Good opportunity.
Good advice.
Yeah, sure. So I don't use sex as a way of being anything. But your body has to operate on something. And if we have this evolutionary psychology of ours, we have a consideration. Is this... this respite, this being laying around and doing nothing, is that supposed to be to recharge your engines, or is it supposed to be to stop the engines? If some part of you wants to stop the engines, then you just become somebody who can't move and you become lazy and you just don't go anywhere. If it's meant to reactivate or get you ready, then that's where all the pundits say, you got to get out there and you got to do something. Now, so they recommend that you do minor exercise, you do something to clean up, get yourself out there, force yourself out there. Hardest thing in the world is to have people telling you that you're lazy. It's a terrible feeling, you know? They're after you as well. I wish somebody would pick you up, carry you outside, you know, put you in a wheelchair, walk you into the park, and here, let's take a walk together. We'll do it your style. That would be something welcome, I think. And I think that would help a great deal more. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI with Ben. And Ben, it's our last visit with you for a short while, right?
I'll be back tomorrow for tomorrow's show.
It's tomorrow's show, right? And we are bringing you stuff about what it's like to be lazy, what it's like to be non-motivated. Many a person thinks that the ideal state of mind is a state of peace, that we're looking for peace. That's what everybody says. Give me peace. Let me feel peace. Let me just be calm. And we look towards a world of non-aggression. The unfortunate thing is the people who most want to do that are the people who are the people who most want that world of quietness are the people who fear their own aggression. Very often, what's behind this non-being able to get yourself motivated in life is a fear of your own aggression. When we get back from our break, we're going to be talking about people who are afraid of their own aggression, who are afraid to get angry. They don't want to get angry. They don't want to express anger. Right, we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. I picked a very famous old song for you to play for you today that's just something I haven't heard in a long while, and it leads us into summer. It was originally by Helen Merrill, who did, I think, the best version of it, but this new version of it makes me feel really good. I like it very much. We will be we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends.
Tulip trees are blooming, and there's not another human in view but us two. It's a lazy afternoon, and the farmer leaves his reaping, in the meadow cows are sleeping, and the speckled trout stop leaping upstream. hear the grass as it grows. Running riot, and there's no one passing by it to see. Come spend this lazy afternoon.
LaTanya Hall with Lazy Afternoon. That was David Heath on the flute. You're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York. And your host, Armand DeMille.
Hey, and your co-host, Ben Starr and Julian Joiello, guest in the studio. Hi there.
Hi.
Mark, you're on the line. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand.
Hello, Mark.
Talking about being lazy and what you were saying about aggression.
Yeah.
You
find it hard getting out in the morning, or you find yourself laying around and hanging around where you can't get yourself motivated?
Yes. Yeah, well, except I do work. But today I'm off, and there's nothing I like better than laying around and listening to you and, you know, a couple other people on your station.
So it's like a lot of fun just to lay around and take the day off. But,
yeah.
You just reminded me of something. The fact that people have computers now means that they could be at home and work at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes even further into the fact that you never really have to get out there. You just do a few days on the internet, you do your little business on the internet, and you kind of take off from there. What kind of work do you do?
Retail, so that's not...
What do you sell? What do you sell?
Men's clothing.
And men's clothing. And what do you sell men's clothing? Do you actually get out there on the floor and sell it?
Yeah,
How do you like dressing up a man?
Oh, I like it. I especially like when I've been doing it a very long time.
Yeah.
Especially like when a fellow comes back and says, or when he comes back and he says, that suit you sold me, I got so many compliments on it.
And that feels really good to you.
Sure.
Now, were you able to help your dad? Was your dad available to help? So here you did a smart thing. Look at how smart this is. You had a dad who you couldn't make an effect on, right, in any way. He probably wasn't really related to you in some way. Is that true?
Yeah.
He was distant from you.
Very.
And so you went into a business where you could get men, mm-hmm. and you could say, I want you to like me, and I want you to like what I do, and I'm going to do good by you. And they said to you back, that's a nice job. And you cured that pain.
This is true. Yeah.
You fixed it. That was pretty smart.
Yeah, I guess so.
That was pretty smart. You never related the fact that you do retail clothing for men and it's somehow related to your relationship with your dad.
No, not at all.
How could you have been listening to my program for so long and not thought of that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mark, how could you be listening to me and not point the finger back and say, hey, how does this relate to me? So what happened to your relationship? So then love must be a difficult place for you.
Excuse me?
Love must be a very difficult place for you.
Well, no, I am in a very long-term relationship, but it has gotten difficult.
And are you lazy in that relationship? Do you find yourself, like, kind of apathetic and,
Yeah, definitely. Well, you could say that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so what would you like?
I would like, not to be apathetic.
Okay, and so what are you going to do about that? Besides changing the relationship, what are you going to do about you feeling this way towards someone who you love, who feels back from you this apathy? What are you going to do for the lady?
Well, I feel the same thing.
Yeah, and you feel it too, sure.
It's like kind of mutual.
Sure. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, I haven't really, I've thought of many things to do about it. You know, like you mentioned, you know, do something different. You know, just something simple, even, you know.
Like, I love it. I think you, Mark, I think you're a remarkable, right? His name is Mark. Remarkable. Good name.
Yeah.
Mark, I think you have power. And I think you have power to go beyond that. I think you have the power to go inside and start life again. You're somewhere around, what, 63, 64?
Yeah.
Right?
Around there.
Around somewhere within that range?
A little higher.
Okay. And you have a chance at this point to get yourself on fire again. Because you have stuff that's in the garage. Your stuff that's in the garage is part of your will, part of your spirit. We want to take it out of there, and I want to get you traveling. So I need you to take a trip with your wife that's not to visit a relative. Where would that be?
Well, yeah, that's something, yeah, we did. But it was 2 years ago, and she wanted to visit a relative. I said, no, I don't want to see a relative.
Good.
So
good.
We, you know, we stayed in a hotel and didn't see a relative.
How good for you. When are you going to do that again? Sounds like next week or the week after.
Well, no, I should do it again.
You're darn right.
Yeah.
You're darn right. Send me a postcard. What is a postcard? send me an email.
An email, yeah.
Mark, thanks for calling in.
Okay.
212-757-5555. So here comes the question, what are you going to do about it? Becomes a question. There it is. All right, I feel this. Well, what are you going to do about it? And you get this feeling of being frozen in space. I don't know what to do. I can't take advice.
I think in some cases it may call for maybe an extreme action. Like you said, taking a trip somewhere very far away that's completely new, that you've never been. Take yourself completely out of your environment. Throw yourself into a complete unknown, brand new situation. I think that can help jolt our sort of doldrums out of us.
It sure can. Let me see. Now we have, I want to say a special thank you to Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. Hi, everybody. I didn't expect to get through.
And you got through. And I want to say thank you to Pete and Nina and Emmanuel and Paul and Henry, because although we thought our phones were fixed, they're rolling over, and you're hearing the beautiful voices, but I am going to call every one of you within the next few days to at least say hello.
Thank you, Armand. I'm actually calling today about my brother.
Tell me.
I feel like he's as you're describing, he's just in this stagnant, life where he's not moving forward. He lives in the past, and I don't know what to do for him. He's definitely going through a depression, and it's very difficult to watch and not be able to help him.
Yeah, so does he welcome your help?
No. No.
Does he welcome anybody's help?
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He is basically right now, he's in isolation. He doesn't...
And where does he isolate himself?
I'm sorry?
Where does he isolate himself? Does he do it in his house?
His apartment.
Yeah. Does he have a mate? Does he have a relationship with somebody?
No, he did, but he doesn't anymore. And he had this one good friend, but I'm not sure if he's still in touch with her.
Could you afford to get him into a consultation with somebody?
I could probably afford it, but I don't know if I could keep up with it.
No, just once.
Mm-hmm.
Just once to look, because, you know, the best thing he may have going for him is, because neither of you may be able to afford it, maybe the best bet is to just get him to one place where he does a consultation with somebody. And maybe if he has to take a medication, take a medication. But do something to not sink any further.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's what so that's the motive. The motive is to take him with you. Is to say, is to take control of it and to say, hey, we're going to do this. I made the appointment. I'm going with you.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
It sounds fantastic. I might have to give him some sleeping pills to get him in the car.
What do you mean?
I don't know if he would go. I offered this to him, and he just he doesn't accept the offer.
Okay, so let's try it this way. Let's say that what you're saying to him is, I need you to do this because it's about me personally. I am feeling depressed. I, Elizabeth, am feeling depressed. And I'm going in for myself, and I need you to go with me. So make it as if it's about you, not about him.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that's the way that people come in, because they know that you're coming in. So bring him in with you, or bring him somewhere, or call me and I'll find you a place. Where do you live?
I live in Staten Island, New York.
Staten Island, okay, that's a nice ferry ride over. Do you still take a ferry, or do you drive over the bridge?
Oh, I haven't been to Manhattan in quite a while.
Oh, now wait a minute, so you're like your brother.
Isolated, well, no.
In your own way.
Sometimes I am, but I'm never depressed. I've never been depressed.
You sound like a person who really loves her brother and he wants to do something about it.
Yeah.
And this is such a feeling that happens so often, so frequently with people, that the best thing I can say to you is bring him with you. Throw him in a car, you know what I mean? Do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Say, come with me, I'm going to go see this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. And I just want to see what we could do about it. Getting you to the next place.
Yeah. Okay.
And if not, have you ever gotten angry at him?
I go through all different emotions. I'm angry. I feel sad for him.
Do you yell at him?
No. Sometimes I feel like I scold him, which I don't want to do.
Okay. So scolding is one thing. Being angry is another. Let me hear what a scold would be like. Scold me for being depressed. Go ahead, do it.
You have so much to live for. Why are you doing this to yourself?
That's disgusting. Great. Great. Now show me what it's like to be angry.
Anthony, I don't understand why you're not talking to me. I don't understand what I did. That's when I'm starting to take it personal, and I do understand deep down this isn't personal.
Okay, try this one now. You ready, Elizabeth? Stand back from the phone. Elizabeth, I'm angry at you. I'm angry at you because I need you. I need you to be around me, and you're just laying there as if it doesn't matter one bit. I'm angry with you because you're my brother, and I need you to be a part of my life. So I understand you got a right to be depressed. You got a right to be as quiet as you want to be, but I need you. And I'm angry with you because you won't come through for me. So I need you to get off your ass and come with me and get on, you know, get in this car, because we got to find a solution to this. For my sake, not for your sake, for my sake.
Yes.
Now, Elizabeth, how does that sound? Any different than what you said?
Yes, it's very different. But it is right on point.
You have to come from a purely selfish point.
Okay.
And he may hear you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. Let me know if you need my help.
Thank you.
Sure. So what's the difference? You know, very often people are this way because they're angry. And they don't know what to do when they're angry.
And maybe it takes, like you just mentioned, an angry relative to present the anger to make them wake up and smell the coffee, so to speak.
How could we not? Right, absolutely, for sure. You know, and when you get that sometimes, it's an act of love. When someone loves you and they come at you with a selfish need, they are coming at you with an act of love. They're saying, this is what I need of you. Don't just lay around and do nothing. Pick yourself up. And sometimes it requires you leaving them. Sometimes it requires you just saying, we can't do it anymore. I got to change it. You know, in Al-Anon and in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things that they say is, if you've got a partner who's drinking, you have to say to them, you're going to lose your family. And you have to follow through on that threat.
I think it's very difficult to watch someone, you know, harm themselves, either whether it's with alcohol or just through, you know, this avolition that we're discussing. There's, a real powerlessness that people feel where they want to help someone they love and they just don't know how.
Yeah. So one of the things that I say is the thing that people leave out is, I think Elizabeth was really beautiful because what Elizabeth said was there was no, what Elizabeth said was that she scolds, and she recognized the difference between scolding and being angry. See, scolding doesn't work. When you get scolded, you feel like a kid in a teacher's class. You know, you want to hide in the closet and let them hit you over the head with a stick.
I would just shut down.
That's what you did. That's what we did, yeah. Right? Right. Yeah. You and I grew up alike.
Right.
Right? That teacher's yelling at us. Go ahead, yell at us. I'm gone. But if somebody says to you, I'm angry with you because I need you and I'm your family and I love you and I want you to be with me, and they come out directly to you and say, this is what I want of you. Boy, that's heaven. That means they really care. 212-757-5555. Let's take Ronnie. Hi, Ronnie, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I have a daughter who has this lethargic approach to everything, and we can't get her motivated. She graduated college 2 years ago and basically stays at home, goes out with a few friends once a week or so, but can't get her motivated to do anything.
So who is she angry at?
She's not necessarily angry. She seems to be very, very lazy.
Uh-huh.
and very lethargic. And she's not angry. She sleeps a lot.
Okay, do you get angry at her?
We try not to because...
But no, I'm asking you if you... I say you say we.
Well, my wife and I.
Yeah. Do you get angry at her?
When I do get angry, you know, it doesn't get anywhere. She just shuts us off.
So tell me how you get angry. Give me an example of how you would get angry at your daughter, as if I were your daughter. How would you express it?
Okay, so I'll come home at 3 o'clock and I'll say, well... What's going on? Just say nothing, and she'll be in bed. I may wake her up. I say, you know, it's a beautiful day out. Why don't we go outside? Let's go out for a walk. Let's go for a bike ride. No, I don't feel like it. I just want to stay in bed. You know, this is not good. This is a terrible thing. You must get out. You must do something.
You see, here's where it goes back to scolding. So scolding is not an expression of anger. You come home, and here's what I would say to my daughter, who my daughter and I cared. I would say, you're still in bed. Let me tell you something. I feel terrible. I feel powerless. I feel weak. I feel sad, and I am angry. I'm angry with you because I need you to pull along with me. I need you to get out of that place and at least not occupy my mind day and night. All day, all night, I'm trying to say to myself, what am I going to do for her? What am I going to make her happier? But I'm angry with you because you're not fighting with me. So I need you to get with me and to get into this program. You could do it all you want on your own, but I need you to help me.
And by helping me, what do I need her to do?
I want her to get up and go out with you and go take a walk. I want her to go to a movie with you. Unless there's some reason she's angry with you that she can't tell you, and that very frequently is the case, there might be something going on that she doesn't want to talk to you about. And that she may need a counselor. Does she have a counselor?
She won't speak to her counselor. She's had several, and she doesn't talk to them. So they want to do short therapy, and she won't. She just gets there.
Then she does have secrets. Okay. So then she needs somebody. Then
she doesn't share. This has been a pattern in her whole life.
Where does she live?
Now that she's 20, in her mid-20s, it's a problem.
But where does she live? Where do you live? What city?
We live in Queens, and she lives at home.
Call me. Let me find you somebody around the neighborhood who could possibly talk to her, because it sounds like it's a fairly serious condition in her mid-20s.
I think so. I think it is. We're at our wit's end. We don't know.
Send me an email, and let me help you look, okay?
Very good. Appreciate it.
This is Armand DeMille. I'm sorry, because I keep looking at these. When it gets down to these, and I knew if we discussed this, we would find... exactly this would happen. It's 212-757-5555. This is what I expected. When you see people who are lethargic, who are laying around, I expect you're going to find that kind of level of, oh, my God, I'm really worried about these people. And you do get worried. You do get worried when a person won't move. It won't budge. You know, we all expected. Did you ever see an elephant after it sees another elephant died? It's like you see an elephant and walks over to the elephant that died and it budges it. It kind of punches it, kind of moves it.
Yeah, they try to get them back up.
Yeah, we. Are you really gone?
The whole pack of elephants. You know, they mourn their dead.
Right, and what they're
doing. It's an unbelievable thing.
It's a beautiful thing. They kind of push it. Are you really still here? And I think that's the way we feel very often with somebody like that. We kind of, come on, could you be with us? Could you be with us, please? But I think the loud bark, I mean, if an elephant, if they all decided to shout at once, the guy may get back up. You never know. But they just take it a lot of passively. So I say don't be so passive. Show your feelings, but don't show your feelings through scolding. One more call. Nina, we got just 1 minute. Let's say hello to you.
Hi, Albert. Thank you for taking my call. It seems like today you were speaking just to me because last year I lost my job on the 4th and my mother passed on the 12th.
Wow.
And good I've
stuff.
Been out of it. I've tried to do, you know, what I could do, but, you know, then I fall into oblivion with the television or, you know, just nothingness. So I hear. How do you spell abolition?
Abolition. A-V-O-L.
A-V, okay, thank you. A-V-O-L. Now I know what's going on.
You know what, listen now, where do you live?
I live in Brooklyn.
Okay, you live in Brooklyn. Are you near the park, near Prospect Park?
Yes.
I thought so. So you're right near that park, right?
No, I could walk to it.
You could walk, well, that's pretty near. And what part of the park do you love the most?
I guess by the water, by the lake.
By the lake. It's really nice around there. The flowers start coming, just peeking through right about now. Here's what I need you to do. First step, Nina, I need you to walk to Prospect Park. I need you to go over to your lake. I need you to find a tree that's a mid tree, not a giant tree, but a middle tree. One that you can get your arms around. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
I want you to hug that tree.
I will.
Hug it. Put both arms around it. And just hug it with all your might. Just hug it. Let it hug you back, because that tree's going to send stuff right back to you. And then while you're doing that, would you do me one more favor?
Yes.
Just say the name Armand.
Yes, that I will do. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. We got to get going, friends. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Special thanks to all of you being in the studio with us, you wonderful folks. I want you to all know that in the middle of this, a cup of coffee spilled on the desk. And we silently did not even, it wasn't even a whisper. Every electronic was threatened by the coffee. Coffee was dripping everywhere. It was everywhere. And the four of us are scurrying and cleaning it up. And you didn't even know it. That's how good we are, right? We're really good. Guys on the floor blotting it up.
It
paper
was very
towels.
Smooth.
It was smooth. So we get up, he'll handle all things like that as smoothly as that. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1:00.